first, Wisconsin elections have been under intense scrutiny since 2020, with many conservative groups making claims about voter fraud that in most cases haven't yielded significant evidence. More recently, the attention has turned to the state's voter rolls, where activists have sought to uncover ineligible voters who may have participated in elections. Our next guest looked into these claims and investigations, found that there are some gaps in the system and some things that might need to be fixed, but no evidence of widespread numbers of ineligible voters that could affect the results of elections. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered these claims about ineligible voters? What questions do you have? Do you work as a clerk yourself? What kind of things go into managing voter rolls in your community? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Matthew DeFore is the State House Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Watch, the news arm of the nonpartisan nonprofit Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He previously covered state and local government at the Wisconsin State Journal for 16 years. Matt, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, great to be here.
Before we dig into the complaints and the things you found, can you talk about the voter rolls? Who is in charge of saying this person is an eligible voter, this person should be taken off the list?
Sure. There are, in the last presidential election, there were 3.2 million people who cast votes. And the state keeps track of a voter roll list, which has more people than that, because they keep track of all sorts of people, including those who are no longer eligible to vote, people who are dead. And it is up to the local clerks. We have 1,800 election officials in the state who have to make sure that they are staying on top of all the people who are registering to vote and who may no longer be eligible to vote because of issues such as they have a felony on their record and they're still serving a sentence, or they're deceased, or as we found in our investigation, some other examples.
And we've seen, and you report on this, widespread efforts to raise questions about who is on these lists, who should be bumped off. Can you talk about some of the groups involved in these efforts to challenge local clerks and their voter rolls?
Sure. There's a few groups that we found, and this is not something that's limited to just Wisconsin. There are groups across the country, conservative groups, who are trying to find these sort of holes in the election system. In Wisconsin, a couple of these groups worked on former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman's investigation of the 2020 election. I talked specifically to Ron Hoyer of the Wisconsin Voter Alliance. There's some other groups, but these were folks who they were raising questions about some of the eligibility of voters as part of that investigation, which has, of course, now been shut down.
One of the main categories you look at in this new Wisconsin Watch piece is people under court-ordered guardianships that specify that they are no longer eligible to vote. It gets a little complicated. Can you talk us through who this might cover?
So in Wisconsin, you are guaranteed the right to vote with some exceptions. I mentioned felons who are currently serving a sentence, but there are people who a court can determine may have a cognitive disability and they may not be eligible to vote because a court has decided that. I do not have a full list of the number of people statewide who would fall under that category, but it's obviously a changing number because some of those people pass away. Some people can have their rights restored. And what we found in our investigation is that the problem that this Wisconsin Voter Alliance had when they looked at these folks, and this, it's the same problem that the Gableman investigation had, is that they were conflating people under a court-ordered guardianship with people who have additionally had their right to vote taken away. And not everybody under a guardianship is ineligible to vote. And that's a really important point that their investigation seemed to gloss over.
Right, and that's a really key point I wanted to bring up. When we hear reports claiming there are thousands of people under guardianships who therefore shouldn't be able to vote, many of those thousands of people might in fact be under guardianships but still have their voting rights intact. Do I have that about right?
Yeah, just to kind of give some perspective on it, I talked to Dane County Clerk of Courts Carlo Esqueda. He pointed out to not just us, but also to the Wisconsin Voter Alliance, that there were about 1,000 people in Dane County adjudicated as incompetent to vote between 2016 and 2021. But if you take that list and you strip out everybody who is still allowed to vote and who's still living, or you take out people who are no longer living, The number went from about 1,000 down to 281. So they were coming up with this number of thousands, but you know, Carlos showed that that number is smaller. But that number itself is also misleading because not all of those people may have registered to vote at any point. So they might not even be in the voter system.
Talking to Matt DeFore from Wisconsin Watch about his new report on challenges to voter rolls in communities around the state. You could join in with your questions, maybe your experiences, maybe challenging something like this, or if you've encountered a guardianship in your own family, you're curious about what that means about voting rights. If you've worked in the system yourself, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Matt, again, your reporting found no widespread problems, apparently, that might have swung an election. That said, there were people who slipped through the cracks in some ways, in small numbers that you've discovered so far. What did you find?
So there was something surprising here. The Gableman investigation did identify one person in particular in Outagamie County. The report didn't identify who that was, but we were able to find out that person through other means. And this person had voted in November of 2020 and April of 2021, even though she had been adjudicated in February of 2020. And so this set off, I think, a lot of alarm bells for conservatives. But when we dug into that specific case, we didn't find anything suggesting more than perhaps an administrative error for the handoff from, I mean, it's essentially a complicated process for how somebody who is adjudicated incompetent by a court, then that information is passed along to the local clerk. And it looked, there's about three different handoffs that have to happen. And in that case, it looked like the handoff didn't happen. We haven't exactly pinpointed where, but she was still on the voter rolls in November 2020 and April 2021. And we know who signed her absentee ballot. It wasn't somebody, you know, who signed her. We know it was a nursing home employee in 2020. We know it was a local clerk in 2020-21. They did not have the information or had not accessed it in the WEC files until April of 2022. And so that's how that person voted. But just to add to that, what was surprising is that when we asked Dane County Clerk Scott McDonald if he would look at their list of people who are adjudicated ineligible to vote, he looked at 20 of the 1,000 people in Dane County, and he did find two people on that sample who were still active. And I think that caused enough alarm that he's now looking at all 1,000 people on their list to see how many might still be active. One of those two people had cast a vote in April 2019 after being adjudicated in November 2018.
We're talking to Wisconsin Watch reporter Matt DeFore about investigations into Wisconsin's voter rules that turned up minimal evidence of illegally cast votes, but not zero. We'll talk about what the Elections Commission and clerks are doing in response to this coming up, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one had to work through voter eligibility issues yourself? What was your experience like? Do you live or work at a nursing home or assisted living facility? What have you seen when it comes to voting? What questions do you have about this complicated process that's become front and center, at least in some political circles? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Wisconsin Watch State House Bureau Chief Matt DeFore. With us today, sharing his reporting on Wisconsin's voter rolls, challenges to them from some conservative groups, and what happens when people are adjudicated ineligible to vote. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have concerns about this system, questions about it? Is this something that's come up maybe in your own family, somebody being judged not able to vote anymore? How did that work on a practical level for you? What questions do you have? What experiences do you have maybe working in the election system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Matt, let's talk about responses to this. Again, as you said, not widespread numbers, it looks like, of people ineligibly voting, but not zero numbers. I think everybody probably wants to make sure things go right. First of all, from clerks, as you mentioned, in Dane County, what kind of efforts are they making to make sure that handoff of information, the declaration of ineligibility, the Elections Commission, the local clerks are all on the same page?
So the way the process is supposed to work is that what's known as the register and probate in a county court system will get that information that somebody has been deemed ineligible to vote, and they will pass it along to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. One thing we found is that they do that through the snail mail, apparently. That information then needs to be uploaded to a list that the WEC maintains of everybody who has been adjudicated incompetent to vote. And as you can imagine, there are people on that separate list who they've never registered to vote. So they need to keep track of those folks in case they ever try to register. But in this, what we seem to be finding is that there could be cases where that information may not be input correctly, for example, into the WEC files. So a local clerk may miss that information. It could be for somebody in a different city where they're adjudicated, and then when they're being asked to vote in a nursing home in a different county, that local clerk may not have connected the dots that's the same person. One thing we also found with this investigation is that in the 2020 election, of course, the special voting deputies that clerk's offices send into nursing homes were not allowed to go in. And so we had a lot of nursing homes handling the voting. And so that, you know, again, can be another layer where there's just a missed opportunity to catch something like this. But again, it's a very small number. So,
and then at the Wisconsin Elections Commission itself, what kind of changes, tweaks are they considering, enacting, talking about, or deadlocking on?
Yeah, and there's a lot of deadlock lately. They are looking into this issue. So we had found that in their communication with the legislature, this conservative group that brought this attention to legislature prompted them to ask WEC. They said that they have been checking into this issue, but they also said that while they acknowledge there could be some of these missed cases, it would require a legislative fix. The legislature would need to specifically tell them how to do the system differently and perhaps more efficiently to make sure that these steps aren't missed. And they have a more efficient system, for example, tracking felons or people who have moved. But in this particular case, it's a very, you know, there's, again, that's multiple steps where human error can be injected at any of those steps. And that's how you might miss, you know, could be dozens of people in the state.
One big difference here, and this comes up in your reporting, is if I'm a felon currently serving a sentence, that's a public record. People are allowed to know that. There's health information involved here for someone who's been declared incompetent to vote. Can you talk about how that affects people trying to get and share this information?
Right. So and it's not just even a health issue. I originally thought this might be HIPAA, but state law specifically bars court officials from revealing the names and addresses of people deemed incompetent to the public. The Wisconsin Voter Line specifically is suing registers and probate in 13 counties to make this information public because they want to check all these names against the voter rolls. But those, you know, the one county has already ruled against them. We'll see if any of those counties you know, allow that information to be public. But yeah, it's not quite the same as public criminal information. This is people whose information is protected.
Right, and the concerns about particularly vulnerable people here. I mean, they might be very vulnerable to a scammer who gets their hands on a list of people in this situation.
You know, that's an interesting irony here, is that these groups are concerned about that very thing happening, and yet they're suing in a way that could make it easier for someone to do that. Right now, I mean, this is part of why we know there's not some grand plan or grand plot here, is because this information is protected. And so I'm not sure how somebody would even go about trying to, scam the system, especially if it's kept private right now.
Let's bring on a caller. Andy is with us in Manitowoc. Andy, hi.
Yes, I wanted to ask about a situation that I know of personally, that in Milwaukee, there was a multi-denominational church group that was asked to go around to nursing homes and pick up ballots and delivering to the multiple drop boxes. And they were specifically told, you know, don't put more than 5 in each drop box. Well, I don't know what that meant, but they were told that specifically. So they had to go to, you know, maybe 2 stops or 3 stops, depending on how many ballots they had. I was wondering what your guest had to say about that.
Andy, thanks for sharing that. A lot of stories going around. Do we have any firsthand stories like that you've encountered, Matt?
Not that story specifically, so I really couldn't comment on what exactly is happening here. But, again, it does sound like the type of story that a lot of conservatives have been sort of promoting, this idea of people dropping off ballots at drop boxes. The evidence that such things are happening has been dismissed by, people all the way up to the former Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr. So I'm not sure what to make of that.
Then looking ahead, Matt, what kind of next steps are you watching for in this story?
So we do want to get an answer to this question. How many people are affected by this? I think doing so helps the public to understand, what it is we're talking about. And again, the unfortunate thing about the Gableman investigation is that it kind of left a lot of these questions unanswered. How many people are we talking about? Is this thousands, as this conservative group has put out in its communications to local clerks all over the state? Or is it, a smaller sort of, still worth noting, but not concerning maybe to the broader public about how our elections are run? And I think that's what we want to get to the bottom of. I think as we continue to talk with the Dane County clerk, with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, we want them to be able to say, we've identified the issue. Here's how we're going to fix it going forward.
Matt, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob, for having me.
Matthew DeFore is the State House Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Watch, part of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He's with us today to talk about his reporting on conservative groups' claims of ineligible voters participating in Wisconsin elections at a large scale, and then looking into the process when somebody is declared unable to vote, what happens, what kind of tweaks are needed. Reckless driving is a growing problem in Wisconsin. Statewide traffic fatalities have increased each year since 2019. Towns and cities around the state are trying to combat reckless driving in many ways, including redesigning the roads themselves. But their options are limited on busy urban highways where state policies can override local efforts. Jonah Chester reports.
As a kid living along West Fond du Lac Avenue in Milwaukee, Tristan Thomas saw plenty of reckless driving. A police officer would park blocks away from his home to catch cars barreling down the road.
He would sit there for like 8 to 10 hours every day, pulling people over constantly because they're just flying down the street with no regard for anyone else.
Thomas is 40 and lives in Appleton now, but he's tragically aware reckless driving on Fond du Lac hasn't gotten better since he was young. On the morning of March 12th, his sister Dwinetta Thomas was making a left turn at the intersection of Fond du Lac and Congress Street. A driver in oncoming traffic hit her vehicle. She later died of her injuries.
It's still incredibly hard to believe that she isn't here. We'll have a messenger call where, everybody's got the video cameras on and we're looking at each other, and then it's just, you're waiting for her to come on, and it's like, oh, she's not coming on anymore.
Thomas says Fond du Lac Avenue looks essentially the same as when he was a kid. That's in spite of efforts to make change. The road runs northwest from downtown Milwaukee until it connects with Interstate 41 at the edge of the city. The municipal street is part of State Highway 145, making it what's known as a connecting highway. On roads like this, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation gets final say over any infrastructure changes. That includes traffic calming measures like narrowing pedestrian crossings and reducing lane widths to encourage drivers to slow down. WSDOT gives high priority to traffic flow when considering proposed changes. Advocates like Jordan Morales say that priority hinders new road safety projects. Morales is the vice president of Milwaukee's Sherman Park Community Association.
The Milwaukee Department of Public Works, they're more concerned or becoming more concerned with pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure, and they're actually more concerned about slowing cars down. So you've got kind of two competing philosophies.
A city report from 2019 found 16 of Milwaukee's 25 most crash-prone intersections sat on or near Fond du Lac Avenue or Capitol Drive, another state-connecting highway. And from January 2017 to July 2022, 42 people died in traffic collisions along the two roads. That's about 11% of the city's total traffic deaths during that time. Milwaukee officials say WSDOT has allowed some changes on connecting highways. Those include protected turn lanes, as well as concrete bump outs and expanded medians to shorten crosswalks at busy intersections. But Gerald Krushke, Milwaukee's interim commissioner of public works, says WSDOT has rejected more ambitious proposals like narrowing or eliminating lanes.
I think they're starting to understand the needs that we have in the city, which is a good start. I still think we have a long way to go.
Stephen Flottmeyer is the planning chief for WSDOT's southwestern region. He says the department considers the needs of all road users when weighing new projects, but he acknowledges WSDOT typically approaches rural and urban highways with the same set of goals, which includes traffic flow.
The only difference is within the connecting highways, the city plays a much bigger part in the conversation.
Duanetta Thomas's family is among those who would like to see that relationship evolve more quickly. Tristan says they think changes to make Fond du Lac Avenue safer could save families from what they're going through.
It's a gigantic loss for our family. It's a gigantic loss for the community in which she served, and we just have to make sure that nobody else's bright light gets snuffed out.
Duanetta had moved to Sheboygan, but was still in Milwaukee often.
The day she was killed, she was actually dropping someone off at a store. So I think it's apropos that she was out helping someone and then that happened. So she was definitely loved.
Duanetta left behind two adult children and four siblings. Jonah Chester, Wisconsin Public Radio.